into outer space now. And Professor Steve Poynting is the director of the Institute for Applied Ecology at AUT University, where he's hunting for life on Mars. So why the red planet, Steve? Why Mars? Why not, for instance, Uranus?
Oh, I was hoping someone else would get that one in before I did.
So to speak.
Yeah. Hey, look, Mars is our closest neighbour, and to understand why it's worth looking there, it's more than just proximity and getting there easily. It's also about understanding a concept, and that concept is known as the habitable zone. So essentially for any star like our Sun, there is a very small zone around that star that is able to support planets that can harbour life. And it's really a confluence of two functions. Number one, the planet needs to be just the right distance from that star to allow water to exist as a liquid. So if it's too far away, the water is cold and frozen. If it's too close, the water is evaporated and not available. And the second thing is the planet has to have enough mass to retain an atmosphere such that gases that are useful to life, like carbon dioxide, like oxygen, are retained, but heavier, more toxic gases are not retained.
Yeah, you know, they were going to build a nightclub on Mars, but they said it was crap because there's no atmosphere.
Oh, great. Parking wouldn't be an issue anyway. It's interesting. Funnily enough, going on from that, there's actually a Dutch TV company have been advertising for a bunch of individuals to take a one-way trip up to Mars for a reality show.
But they were all old people, and they said old people only, didn't they? Because they didn't want anyone who was going to come back. They said, well, A, it would affect the budget, and B, there was danger of radiation exposure, wasn't there? Because NASA did, with the Curiosity rover that landed, it's almost 2 years ago, it's this weekend, isn't it? It's going to be 2 years of Curiosity, the
it's
rover
It's 2 years
that
this
came
week,
down.
Yes.
They used the radiation sensor on Curiosity to measure the incident radiation exposure that it got during the... Because it's over half a billion kilometres of travel to Mars, isn't it?
That's right, it's six months in a cramped
spaceship.
It equated
to basically an astronaut's entire working lifetime's worth of radiation exposure just making that journey.
Absolutely, and that's largely because there is no atmosphere to block out those harmful incoming rays. So, yeah, it would be unimaginably large task to get people living up there permanently. But, you know, we have to aim big. The simple truth is that when one considers our star, it has a finite lifespan, and we're a single planet species at the moment. And so really, you know, philosophically, we have to ask ourselves, do we really want to admit that once planet Earth becomes uninhabitable, that we're going to die out? So that's really, for my mind, is the philosophy behind exploring Mars.
What makes you think that Mars might have life on it at all?
Well, it's a good question. The sort of life we'd be looking for, let me be clear, is not little green men. You know, I don't think we're expecting... but we're not really looking at that. The reason is this, and I've got a bit of show and tell for the people listening. I'm holding up a rock at the moment, which has a rather smudgy green line just beneath the surface. This is the surface of the rock here. And this green line is about 20 millimetres below the surface. And this is the sort of life that we expect to encounter on Mars. This particular rock is actually from Antarctica, but Antarctica is what we call a Mars analogue. It's the closest thing on Earth that we have to Mars' surface. It's very cold, it's very dry, and there's relatively high radiation levels there because the atmosphere is thinner at the poles. This sort of life, although it's green, is not a green man or a green woman. It's actually cyanobacteria, which are very, very primitive plants. They're single-celled microbial plants, essentially. And that's the sort of thing we're expecting to find there.
And just to be clear, they can actually thrive in the temperatures. They're actually viable at the sorts of temperatures you see in Antarctica.
Well, they're not viable at surface temperature. The surface temperature on Mars can be anything down to minus 110 degrees, which biological reactions just won't occur there. But these organisms are just below the surface. And the reason is that in Antarctica, for example, they're exploiting very marginal gains in temperature and humidity that occur below the surface. And so the reason Curiosity, for example, has a drill on it is that NASA's aim is to drill into the rock and thereby try to identify whether life is either present or has been present in the past, which is probably our best bet.
Have they found anything yet?
No, Curiosity doesn't have a primary aim to search for life. Curiosity actually is looking for the chemical conditions that could have supported life. So, for example, how sustained was the presence of water on the surface? But in 2020, there is a sort of an amped-up version of Curiosity going to be launched, which will have a slightly adjusted payload, and that will have a direct aim to search for life. And actually, it's a good segue to our previous speaker, because it's actually using lasers, in this case a Raman spectroscopy laser, to try and identify compounds that are specific to life, and in particular these green life forms, the cyanobacteria.
So you've looked in rocks from Antarctica and have presupposed that if life does exist on Mars, it's probably going to be sort of similar or have similar chemistry to the life we see in extreme environments here on Earth that are sort of similar. So if we therefore go looking for those same sorts of chemical hallmarks on Mars, that's the best place to go looking.
Yeah, I mean, there are arguments for and against this strategy. I mean, some people could argue why would life be DNA based, for example, as all life on Earth is, but the simple truth is that chemistry has arrived at the most parsimonious solution for life. The simplest solutions are often the best, and so we know that there are certain compounds in life that are very good indicators, and in particular, not necessarily DNA, but actually compounds such as chlorophyll, for example, are potentially a very good indicator for life.
So this habitable zone, Mars, is basically the convenient option.
It is a convenient
option.
6 months,
I mean, it makes your trip through Dubai look pretty easy, doesn't it? You were whinging about that.
What, my trip down here?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the lounge would be like in Mars. But the great thing about Mars is also looking at Mars' immediate past. Probably as little as 5 million years ago, Mars very possibly was pretty much like maritime Antarctica is now. It was much warmer, much wetter, and quite conceivably could have supported life. And that's largely a result of the obliquity of the planet having changed quite radically.
Why do you think that's happened? And why so recently?
Well, this is down to astronomers, but quite simply, the angle of tilt for the planet Mars has changed from about 45 degrees to about 23 degrees, which is more or less identical to Earth's, just in the last 5 million years. And of course, the poles were that much more exposed to the sun, and most of the water is at the poles, ergo there would have been much more water, and that's really the basic prerequisite for life.
Because it's very recent, isn't it, that undergone such a dramatic shift?
Yeah, it is an estimate, of course, but it's you know, those that know in the astronomy field stick by that.
So do we think then that, because we know life got started on Earth very quickly, didn't it? I mean, by 3.9 billion years ago, in a planet that's only 4.5 billion years old, we've got evidence that there were little cells already here going about their business on Earth. Do we think that probably the same thing was happening in parallel on Mars then?
Well, a lot of people believe so. As you say, I mean, life on Earth, there are traces for life on Earth pretty soon after the lunar cataclysm. And life could have even conceivably originated before then, but been wiped out by the, as you may know, there was a very large impact of planet Theia, that protoplanet Theia, that impacted early Earth, and the mess that resulted as ejecta into space formed our moon. So nothing really survived that. But very soon after that, as you say, life evolved. But a lot of people believe that life could have evolved on Mars because Mars, although it's slightly outside the perfect habitable zone now, was actually once in that zone, and will actually enter that zone again in the future. So yeah, a lot of people believe life could have co-occurred on two planets. And of course, that brings up some really amazing philosophical questions.
And do you think that if there is life on Mars now, do you think that it could be in a sort of stasis, sitting, waiting, so that when the sun gets a bit warmer and swells up a bit as it ages, that life could come back to life, as it were?
Yeah, it's quite possible. I mean, one of the things about microbes that's really remarkable is their ability to essentially go dormant for very, very long periods. We've retrieved bacteria from ice cores, you know, thousands of years old that are viable. So, yes, it's quite conceivable.
Thanks, Steve. Professor Steve Poynting, and he is the director of the Institute for Applied Ecology at AUT University. You're listening to The Naked Scientist, This Way Up with me, Simon Morton, from Radio New Zealand National, and Dr. Chris Smith,